It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
We are still here. Yep, it's still here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, in Phoenix, Arizona, from the studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. All kinds of goodies there. You need to go. Need to go, need to go, you need to go. You know, one thing is too many people are going. And we're starting to hit capacity. But, you know, I'm pinky sweared promised that they're adding on capacity, more memory, and more goodies. And we're totally redoing the back end so that things work a lot faster. Because we did not anticipate this kind of volume. Well, I kind of did. I mean, you know, I knew eventually it would come, but it's, you know, it's sneaking up on us. So we're increasing the capacity of Freedom's Phoenix to handle massive traffic. Because what happens is, you know, everything's going great, going great, going great. And then it's like 7 o'clock at night or something like that. And then boom, everybody's going for whatever reason, search engines doing the kind of stuff that we cover. It's important, whatever. We do something, searchlight thing, whatever. All of a sudden, everybody just floods in. And the servers go out and it starts slowing down a lot. And it limits our capacity, what we can do. So if it's starting to slow down the site a little bit when you go to Freedom's Phoenix, it's because you and everybody else is going there. So we're getting up to speed. And I'm told by the end of this week we should have all kinds of new Uber compete with the big boys stuff, which is, you know. And the webmasters, I told them, I said, look, I'm telling you, man, it's going to happen faster than you think. All of a sudden, now they got religion. I go, uh-huh, see, what did I say? And, you know, that's one thing. I tell you, this has been my experience. I got a phone call this morning from my parents. And I got time to talk to them and everything. And they say happy birthday and all that kind of stuff, you know, from yesterday. And I'll share this story with you. My parents are probably about 70 now. And my dad was born in 39. What does that make him? Probably about 70. So this is a story that I'm sure is replicated across the United States. And I'll share this with you because, hope my parents won't mind. I don't talk about my parents a lot. You know, out of respect, you think, you know, you just wait till they're gone and then you can say whatever you want. But I'll share this with you. My father has a lot to do with the kind of person that I am for, you know, there's good and bad and all that kind of stuff. Doesn't matter. But the bottom line was this. My dad never shied away from any new thing. I mean, if it was building furniture, remodeling a house, learning how, you know, he didn't know enough to not know that he shouldn't do it or something. I mean, he just dove right in. I'll figure it out as we go. And he was very mechanically inclined and so on. But I got to learn. I mean, as a young kid, I'm playing with welders. You know, my father owned, when I was probably about six, he bought a big Gulf station, which is like a Shell or Exxon or something like that. Gulf in the Southeast, you know, was popular back then. And it had three bays, had an auto body and paint shop in the back. He had U-Haul. He had a wrecker service. He had a wash, you know, bay. He had all this stuff. So I learned a lot about machines and mechanics and changing tires and pumping gas and everything when I was like eight. You know, so this is, you know, a lot of skills I passed on to my kids, but there was a work ethic that we had, and things are, the world's changing, and we talked about it, and I'll share it with you, because I'm sure you're going through the same thing.
There are those that just want to be left alone,
and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Turn on the tube, what do I see? A whole lot of people crying, don't blame me. They point the crooked little fingers at everybody else. Spend all the time feeling sorry for themselves. Victim of this, victim of that. Your mama's too thin and your daddy's too fat. Get over it. Get over it. All this whining and crying, bitching and fit. Get over it. Get over it.
Yeah, get over it. Get over it here on Declare Your Independence. Of me, Ernest Hancock from Phoenix, Arizona, the beautiful studios of Freedoms. With an S, phoenix.com. Neil, the one thing that I wanted to make sure that I shared with you today is a little bit of history on my family, because it's not that unique, I would imagine. There's a lot of people in the same situation. You can certainly be able to recognize yourself or people you know that have similar stories. I'm going to go ahead and share this with you. This is the first time I think I've gone into detail about my childhood and so on, my family and such, because, you know, I just don't, you know, I mean, you know, childhood is childhood. You know, my parents wasn't too traumatic or anything like that. You know, my father made sure we had, you know, food and a roof over our head, you know, as stressful as that effort might have been. but they're coming to be in a situation now where they're past their productive years. They're dependent. Now, they're on Social Security, on Medicaid, they got, you know, ailments and all this stuff. And I remember my father, he and I, you know, I know better than argue my dad. You know, it's just, I share my opinion. Am I understood? I tell you, this is where this came from. You hear me sometimes say, look, I know better than to try to convince you. You know, I'm just trying to make sure you understand why I am so convinced. Because if I try to convince you of anything, you know, then you get defensive. You know, you put up the sandbags, you dig your foxhole deeper, you get so invested in something, an ideology or a position or some kind of a philosophy that you hold, or you just defend it, and you get into justifying all kinds of crazy stuff that's just, I mean, to take that position, you have to argue that it's government's role to fill in the blank. Oh, yeah? You know, if that's what I got to do to justify my position, well, that's what I'm going to do. I mean, where do I get this from? It's arguing my dad, okay? So I looked at, I'm not going to change. Our relationship is whatever he, you know, reasoning, that's not even on the table. So I just look, am I understood? I mean, I know what's coming. I see it. Am I understood? Do you understand what I've said? What to look out for? What? Yeah, no, I hear you. Fine, then I'm good. Let's talk about the weather. Because, you know, you love your family. You want to warn them. You know, my in-laws are the ones that really kind of I give you the family structure. I do this because this is for the archive. You know, this is for my grandkids. This is for to be, you know, looked at later. This is for a window into the mind of freedom-oriented individuals that, you know, see it coming. They're doing everything they can. This levolution is about not just taking care of yourself, but trying to protect and share information with your friends, your neighbors, your family. And we're doing the best we can, you know, and having fun doing it. Oh, last night we went to America West Arena, which they call U.S. Airways Arena now, I think. And they had, you know, Raw, you know, the WWE thing and so on after WrestleMania on Sunday. Well, Kane was at a function in Las Vegas. I mean, he was doing a Las Vegas show. You know, he wasn't here at the Phoenix one, but I don't care because I'm not going to Vegas, hold up signs. So we went down for my birthday. They had a bunch of friends and us, and then we went over to the house and had cake and party. But we went to in front of the arena holding up signs that said, Kane me, you know, Revolution for Kane, and we love Kane in the Revolution font and stuff, and Kane me, I like that. We always make sure the good-looking women hold that one up. Kane me. And, you know, so we did that, and we got together, and we did some video, and I'll put together today. I get time, and I got a bunch of video backed up, but took pictures and so on, and I text them to Glenn Jacobs, which, you know, his character is Kane. And so just to show him some love. And that's what I want to do on my birthday. You know, he's been a really good hardcore guy out there in the entertainment industry that has, when you sell out 70,000 seat arenas, I mean, come on. You know, there's some bodies there, especially these young men and so on. I just want to have fun, but, you know, give me some. You know, we were talking about Venus, Sean Morley that lives here, and Glenn and so on. I'm like, man, if you can get a character, you have like the IRS guy and then the Freedom guy. Beat the living crap out of the IRS guy or vice versa. I mean, heck, it works just as well the other way. And you just have some fun doing that. But, man, they don't want to get political. Heck no. Man, you'd have the man on them like a flash of lightning. So it's, you know, there's a lot of things that you can do to have fun and blow off steam, and we just look for opportunities like that, and that was fun to do. But it only took, I don't know, less than an hour. I mean, we made Donna and Sierra, my daughter, for my birthday, made a bunch of the signs here for everybody, and, you know, they got off work and so on. We just went down there and passed them out. They held them for an hour, and everybody going in and stuff got to see it, and we left. And a bunch of Kane supporters, too. And I just go, oh, yeah, he's my favorite. I'll take it in. You know, one thing we didn't know is they're on Coroplast and foam core board and stuff like that. If it's not poster board and you can kind of roll it up, you know, so that you're not, I don't know, poking somebody's eye out or whatever. You know, if it's not just poster board, they won't let you take it in. A lot of guys wanted to take the signs in. So we learned for the next time, it's got to be like, you know, big poster board for your science project display or something for school. So we'll do that next time, and then we'll get some stuff in. So we had some fun with that. What I'm going to share with you today, I'll go ahead and do that. I didn't plan on this until I got my call from my parents this morning. But I want to share with you a typical life of a family growing up in the 60s and 70s and going, because this is Generation X, okay? Let me tell you how this is working. You have the baby boomer generation, which was born after World War II. They are the ones that are retiring now. But the people that are expected to pay for all the entitlements is a generation that was after them. Well, the generation after them were the ones, the kids that were born probably a little bit earlier in the 30s, you know, in the 30s and 40s, during the Depression, during the and had that influence from their parents. Hey, man, they were a little bit more frugal. They a little bit more, you know, saved it. Maybe they had different experiences or so on. So these are the people that are already retired. These are people that have been retired 10, 15 years. These are the ones that, you know, they benefited from the dream. They were adults during the 50s and 60s. They were the ones that got the good manufacturing jobs and had the unions and made the money and invested and all this kind of stuff. They were the ones that got ripped off from in the last few years, okay? So when I go to these events, these tea parties in all over the deserts and so on out here, and I'm talking to 1,000 retirees, these guys are 70, 75. They got their big $200,000, $300,000, $500,000 RVs. I mean, they're all satellited up, man. You know, they're expanding out all over the place. All of a sudden, it's a double wide. I mean, you know, it's amazing vehicles that these guys have. Well, now it's getting to where, you know, they sold all their home there. That's where they're living. That's it. And they're, you know, a lot of times they're just comfortable there. They're happy. They're good. No lawn to mow. So I go and you talk to these people, and I'll say something like, I go, look, I don't even have to, you know, show a hands or anything. I know the vast majority of you here, you're worth half what you were, if that much, half what you were 2-3 years ago. And then after I do the speech, I just go on from there on the assumption that that's true. And nobody's, nuh-uh. But afterwards, people go up, yep. What should I do this? I had to sell this. I start hearing the stories. And then they start crowding around. And then, you know, then it's like competing woe stories. You know, victim of this, victim of that. You know, mama's too thin, daddy's too fat. Get over it. Well, you know, these are good stories, though. You know, what'd you think was going to happen? But they were victims of public education, propaganda, television, corporate media, news, politicians. I mean, it was a barrage of misinformation. It was, you know, wrapped in an American flag. And all this is true because we're America. America. MK. America. They bought into it. So this is what happened, in my opinion, as I grew up. I was born in 1961. My parents were born in right, you know, 39, 42, around in there. So they are the generation before the baby boomers. They created the generation that they referred to when I was younger called the X generation. The X generation is kind of like, you know, started in the 60s, you know, 60, 61. So I'm a senior citizen of the X generation. We came of age, you know, during the Reagan thing, you know, the hyperinflation. You know, the big, you know, the economy's going. We're going to Iran, the shadow of the mushroom cloud, rock and roll. Reagan's coming in, Ronnie Reagan. All that. So we were a different, we grew up knowing Vietnam was crap. We were threatened with the draft, you know, selective service and doing that after Vietnam. This is what we're going to talk about today. There is a transition we're going through right now, and it's going to have great social ramifications. We'll talk about it in a little bit.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
People, don't stop believing.
Yeah, don't stop believing. Here on Declare Your Independence, me, Ernest Hancock, Phoenix, Arizona, wishing you all a good life. You know, I was in Tennessee getting ready to leave. I was talking to, while I was standing out front going out, and there was one of the employees from the hotel was having a cigarette outside, and we just struck up a conversation, yak, and things went well, and I had a good time, got to meet a lot of people, and I was just glad to be on my way home, you know, going to Pennsylvania and then Tennessee, and I'm just, you know, and she's like, you know, have a good day, and I'm just like, you know, have a good life. And she stopped as she was going into the door, and she said, what? And I go, have a good life. And she just stood and looked at me for a few seconds. She goes, thank you. You know, I something to think, you know, I will. And she was really nice and sweet, and I just felt good, and I'm just, have a good life. How do we do that? And I just felt good. You know, I had a nice time. She was very nice. And can we wish someone a good life and think that that's going to happen? Well, I certainly wish it for myself and my kids and my grandkids and my family and my parents and sisters. How does that happen? Well, my parents did their best to, you know, raise us to be, you know, as productive and have a good work ethic and all that. You know, me and my sisters are probably ahead of the curve. You know, we can make sure that we're taken care of. We've had our ups and downs. We've, you know, went through life. You know, my sisters have gone through divorces. They've, you know, raised children. My younger sisters raised two sets of kids, had twins. You know, I'm like, oh, yeah, baby. And so she's going through teenage years on that right now. That's a chore. So we're past that. Well, I want to give you some history so you understand what I think is coming. And this story is going to be replicated across America by people that the machine has counted on for them to maintain their credibility, jurisdiction, justification for existence, you know, integrity, whatever. You lose this generation. You lose these people. You don't have a backup. I don't, other than force, other than more crap. And with the information that's already out there, I don't know how you're going to put the genie back in the bottle, but this, you know, it's why we do all these DVDs and the show and Freedom's Phoenix and everything. It's the injection of the infection. Just truth. We know the truth. We know the truth, which is not lies. You know, people that come up and say, you know, truth, what truth? And I'm going, you know, it's interesting the kind of people that ask me that. And they're like, and? I go, no, it's just interesting kind of people ask me that. Because I'm like, it's not lies. I mean, how about, you know, accurate information? You know, verifiable facts. I mean, it's, you know, what do you think it means? You know, I'm looking for what? You know, so that's why religions get in trouble. You know, we have the truth. You know, we have, you know, I don't know what else you'd call it, you probably call it an opinion. We have a perspective. We have tried and true methods of living. We have a lot of stuff. You know, you get to the point that you go around slapping people in the face, you know, sooner or later somebody's going to punch you or shoot you. You know, is that a truth? I don't know. It gets pretty close. I mean, you know, sooner or later. So I'm not going to try and do anything other than just make sure you understand why I'm convinced. You see the power of that? I'm not going to try and convince you of anything. I'm just going to share with you the experiences and my observations and what I see and give me the perspective that I have. If you got another perspective, you know, fine, call in 800-313-9443, 800-313-9443. Other than that, if you're not calling in, then you just got to listen. Well, I'll share this with you. And for the archive, now think about it. It is March 30th, 2010. It's a Tuesday. It's a day after my 49th birthday. I'm, you know, doing all the activist stuff that we're doing. We're at the peak of, and things are going crazy around the world. North Korea is going to start starving again. They're always on the verge of starvation sooner or later. And then, you know, so that we make them nice and they'll dismantle a bomb here and there. We'll send them wheat or something, you know. But then we have a South Korean ship. There's an explosion. It sinks. You know, one of the divers is killed by going and trying to do rescue and so on. You have the North Korea and South Korea, ouch, quit it. You know, war is what? The health of the state. And if North Korea is, you know, about on the brink of starvation and the people are going, oh, heck no. Well, of course they got to have a war. And who they got to have that war with? The South. You know, them evil people that want to come up here and save us with capitalism. You know, it's comical. Well, what happened, you know, what's China going to do? They're going to support North Korea, you know, under this communist totalitarianism under Kim Jong-il. I don't know. Sooner or later, it's just like the Berlin Wall. You'll sit there and you had East and West Germany, my generation. All of a sudden, the wall came down. It's a big shock to the CIA. How'd that happen? Because the people just stopped supporting the wall being up. You know, what's going to happen with South North Korea? You think they'll unify? Never! Never! There's tens of thousands of U.S. troops there to make sure it never happens. Of course it will. Sooner or later. Under what? I don't know. But it will happen. We'll talk about it when we come back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
You grew up tall and proud in the shadow.
Ernest Hancock from Phoenix, Arizona, the beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. How about not waiting for the hammer to fall? You know, we grew up in the shadow of the mushroom cloud. That was my generation. Yeah, that's Queen. Singing it, you know, to the peoples. Because that was our communication. You know, we didn't have YouTube. We didn't have, you know, MySpace and Facebook and all this other internet stuff. You know, communication with our generation was through music. So, what were we communicating? Well, I tell you, you just look at Freedom's Phoenix this morning, you have, wow, here we go. You know, rigged USA elections exposed. There's a computer programmer that testifies that Tom Feeney, Speaker of the House of Florida at the time, currently a U.S. representative in, I don't even know where, Florida. I tried to pay him to rig election counts. Well, this is part of the movie America, Freedom to Fascism. They alluded to this a little bit. You know, and then he ran for Congress, and they didn't. You know, so I don't know why my wife put this up. I don't know why. I think it was probably because of the Iraqi Commission moves to disqualify winning candidates. So you have the Alawi bloc that's in there, which, you know, got a narrow victory in there, and then all of a sudden the federal court in Iraq, they just go, six of the winning candidates in the parliamentary elections will be stripped of their votes and lose their seats because we can. And they're saying, well, they had ties to the outlawed bath party of Saddam Hussein, even though they aren't running as bath party guys or whatever. They just go, these guys, oh, heck no, they're not going to be allowed to be seated. And you're still voting? What kind of democratic process, a representation of the people, when they just, okay, yeah, you voted for them and they win, but they're not allowed and your vote don't count and you lose and, oh, yeah, and we expect you not to, like, get mad or anything. How's that democracy thing working out? Then we have, the terrorist attacks in Russia. Well, Putin vows to destroy Moscow Metro terrorists. Oh, we're going to go get them. Well, go get who? Moscow bombings blamed on Chechnya's Black Widows. Suicide squads are made up of women who have lost male relatives, usually husbands or brothers, to the conflict. So, excuse me a second, I got a cough. Okay, that's better. What they have are people that, you know, just like you'd always expect. You have the gunship come in, a Hellfire missile goes into the wedding and blows up a bunch of people, whoever's left over, you know, be they women or men, you know, they tend to get annoyed about such things. I know I would. So, you know, how do they act out? Dying to Win, I think is the name of the book. Ron Paul was promoting it during the 08 presidential cycle, and it was written by a gentleman that wanted to explain why you have terrorist bombings. And most of the suicide bombings aren't even done by Muslims. Excuse me. It's done by people that are occupied. I think he gave the example Sri Lanka. They're not Muslims, you know, and they're doing it all the time. It's a act of desperation by an occupied people. And if they can have the most impact and their lives are destroyed and all the people that they've loved and everything, you know, it's, you know, I don't know how difficult it is to convince someone in that state of mind to, you know, strap on, go and push the button in a railway station. I don't know. I guess it's not impossible. I mean, it's happening. But you don't know. They could be recruited. We found out that the Palestinian stuff and Hamas and all this other stuff is really a Mossad operation. You know, they got their guys in there and they're amping it up. It's just like the militia guys in Michigan. I've been through this here in Arizona. I knew this was coming. And, you know, Napolitano, that's, you know, what she did. She was a prosecuting attorney for the U.S. Attorney's Office on the Viper militia here and all that stuff. That's why we did the Obama thing with a gun to try and stop them using Arizona again. Go pick on Michigan or Montana or Georgia or something. You come here, man, you're gonna have a campaign. You want to play? Let's rock. You know, so were we successful? I don't know. They'll still come find and do something. So Michigan got tapped on the shoulder. So they went after them. Well, I saw some stories up that we may have up later that Mother Jones, you know, some liberal blogs and such, they're going after the Oath Keepers because they're not denouncing these guys quickly and fast enough. And some of the Oath Keepers stuff are going, look, we've been through this before. You know, they said, hey, you know what you're going to find? Guarantee they're going to find some child pornography on one of the guy's computers. There's going to be this guy's that, and he's a bad guy here and whatever. And heck, half the times those guys are the informants. And then you go through. I mean, it's just the way it works. You know, they bad, crazy, off the beam. And yeah, so, you know, until they do something, you can go be all crazy and stupid all you want. But the thing is, what did they do? You know, we haven't found that out. And they're not going to tell you. Until they can manufacture or whatever package that they can come up with. But whatever they say now is what's going to be ingrained. Domestic terrorists, they got yada, 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 yada. And, you know, who does that serve? Well, ask Putin. You know, Putin's got them going into Moscow metros and, you know, blowing themselves up. But then what comes out of it? Western powers vowed to back Russia as its prime minister, Vladimir Putin said he would destroy terrorists responsible for yesterday's suicide attack on Moscow. A White House statement, okay, now we got Putin, Russia, United States, Barack Obama. Now we're all buddies now. Here we go. A White House statement said U.S. President Barack Obama conveyed the condolences of the American people on the loss of life and injuries resulting from the outrageous terrorist attack on Moscow. President Obama said that the United States was ready to cooperate with Russia to help bring to justice those who undertook this attack. The White House said French President Nicolas Sarkozy condemned the hateful twin attacks and promised Moscow authorities France's total solidarity as they confront this cowardly and horrible act. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown's spokesman told journalists the Prime Minister is sending a message of condolence and support to the Russian president. He was appalled at the scenes we have seen coming out of Moscow. The Russian authorities pointed the finger at Islamist militants from the Northern Caucasus for the deadliest attack in Moscow for half a decade. Mr. Putin, who cut short a visit to Siberia, sternly predicted that law enforcement agencies will do everything to find and punish the criminals. The terrorists will be destroyed, yada, yada, yada. Islamo-fascist. Islamo-something. Islamo. You know, the Islamic world, we got to go get these Islams. Oh, they're over here in the Burqa people. So I can see where this is going. And in France, they got the government. Sarkozy wants to outlaw the wearing of the traditional burqa. And, you know, I'm not really sure what the reasoning is. You know, it's like because we love women, we're freeing them from the burqa, so we're taking away their rights to wear it if they want to. Or so, you know, I'm not even sure where that what the rationale is for that. You know, is that the proper rule of government? I mean, you know, they just don't want to be able to hide from the cameras or something, or they might have. I don't know. You know, it's crazy. And this is where we go when you start doing social and economic engineering. Do you think that, you know, Chechnya and, you know, the Caucasus up there when they got the Russian government exploiting them and doing whatever, that they might not get mad when they kill their loved ones and so on? So I'm – what'd you think was going to happen? And then what's the answer to this stuff? Stop messing with people or shoot them? Well, we'll see what they've chosen. So we'll get back to my family. My parents are the product of, you know, being born in the late 30s, early 40s. So they, I would imagine coming out of World War II, there was not a whole lot of love for war, but, you know, a lot of patriotism. Yeah, we want to get back to work and let's go whip butt. So they go in. The whole side of my mother's family is Mormon. And my sister, my year younger than me sister, Mormon, hardcore. Then whole side of my grandmother's family, they were part of the invasion into what's called Lehi, which is a part of Mesa, Arizona here. So you have a large Mormon community here. Man, I got the full dose, man. I know the whole spiel. And my mother's brother, Billy, he and his wife, Harriet, had 15 kids. So I lots of cousins, and they're all having babies. You want to know how you get a bunch of Mormons somewhere? They just have babies. And, I mean, you got Mormon assault vehicles all over the place. We call them Suburbans. So I have a lot of respect and love for the culture because it is a culture. You know, they take care of home. They take care of family. They want to take care of themselves. They got, you know, a couple of years of food stocked up. Their church invests in a lot of, like, orchards and agricultural and livestock and canyons and storage for them. They are prepared. You know, a lot of people go, oh, Armageddon's coming. It's coming, Ethel. I'm on my way. And yeah, but you know what? The Mormons be preparing. It's almost like they really believe it. So I'm going, okay, you know, so that rubbed off on my family and so on. My father's, you know, like a, you know, religious fanatic for his atheism. But, you know, I came more spiritual. It's kind of part of my rebellious streak. But we took on a lot of the storage of food and taking that seriously. I mean, you didn't start putting up in the front of the pantry with food and stuff you're going to be eating on a regular basis until you filled the back of the pantry or the garage or the attic or something with stuff. That's just the way I grew up. You know, good thing. Well, we tried to pass that on to our kids, and they're starting taking that more seriously. So they started having children, you know, the early 60s, me and my sisters. We grew up knowing, you know, first generation that grew up that was totally different from Happy Days with the Fonz and Ron Howard and them doing, you know, was it Chachki and all these other guys and, you know, Mouth and Ralph and what all these guys doing, Potsy and all this stuff. You know, that was how we perceived their generation. Well, now, you know, it's coming to where it's in the 70s, and those kids are having kids, and they're looking back at the Happy Days. You know, before all the Vietnam stuff, before all, you know, so getting our television dose of programming. You know, we had in the 60s, you had what was referencing the Vietnam War on TV regularly. What was the closest you got? You got Andy Griffith and so on. You had Gomer Pyle, USMC, Gomer Pyle. And if you watch some of the old Gomer Pyle episodes, you know, there's little bitty references to, you know, the Vietnam War, but not much. I mean, never. It's all, you know, it's all. I mean, you know, I'm like, seriously. So as we grew up, there was a lot of protests going on. I was a kid in Florida until I was 12. But a lot of it was race. You know, you had forced busing. I remember my sixth grade year, all of a sudden busing came in. So I guess that put me about, you know, late 60s, early 70s. And we were going to go to Moore Mickens Middle School, which was a black school. Now, you had, during segregation, you had money that was taken by tax. They go, all right, separate but equal. I mean, that was kind of the best they could get away with there for a while. So they had, you know, each student will get X amount of dollars, but, you know, the black students go over here and the white over here. Well, of course, the forced busing, you got to integrate and do whatever, however they want to do it, which is kind of dumb because it's geography and you made people had to bus all over the place and pay in the butt. Well, one thing we were going to go to by court order, we're going to Moore Mickens Middle School, which was, I don't know, 15, 20 miles away. And we had, you know, get bused there. Well, it was a big thing with our parents. Oh, man, they freaking out. Hey, that kid's not going to, you know, damn Negroes and, you know, so. We were not really concerned. I mean, my friend, like, yeah, whatever. I mean, you know, we had some black friends and stuff in school and everything. It just wasn't that big a deal to us. So we go, you know, our big thing was how far we had to go. So we go to the school, and man, it was the best cafeteria food I ever had. They actually took the money, you know, that they got for food for the kids. And they bought food with it. And you had the black women and cooks in there and everything, man. They, ooh, all the big women. They said, come on in, children. And we're going to put some good slop on them plates, you know. And I was like, holy crap. We were like, yay, we get to go to school because of the lunches. Can you imagine that? I mean, it was like, yeehaw, I'm going to the restaurant. So they actually took the money and put it into the food. We had no idea. This is a young kid. What, sixth grade? What are you? You know, 11, 12? You know, we were like, wow. Why? How come they get to eat well? That was the first realization that we had that, you know, something was not right. You know, why? Where did they get the money? How come they got all, you know, why did they get these pork chops? I mean, real pork chops. Not like, you know, gravy de la pork chops. I mean, pork chops. Seriously. So I'm going, okay. Well, what we learned is that, you know, there was something else going on. And we talk about it in class sometimes, this segregation thing. And then we go home, talk to parents and tell them, you know, what our experiences were there. And I bet my best public education experience was that sixth grade year there. You know, it's called middle school. And I started becoming aware of, you know, all the stuff that they're screaming about on the television that was being repeated by my parents and my parents' friends and my neighbors and my friends' parents and all this kind of stuff. We, you know, we're just kind of looking at each other. It's just something's not right. And then when you're watching the Vietnam on TV all the time, it's the same loop tape of somebody shooting whatever, you know, and then you're seeing my uncle was a Marine in Vietnam. Now, when he came back, you know, he was a different guy. He was messed up in the head. I think he's still, you know, I haven't talked to him in years. And it just, that wasn't a good experience for him. So my generation was the first generation growing up in every interface that we had with government that something was wrong, that we were lied to, that what they were telling us was not accurate. And I tell you one thing, one of my first memories, and I don't really have time in this segment. When we come back, I'll tell you this. This was, you know, something, a big realization to me that it was later in life, you know, that I remembered this first thought when I was a little kid, my first thought of government. And you'd be amazed at how young I was when I had this. Yeah, you'll want to stay tuned for this one. This is scary stuff, what a, you know, three-year-old is thinking. We'll be right back on Declare Your Independence.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Not for me in particular, really. Just they just want all my goodies. And you're wanted too. Here they come. You know, there's just the health care reform bill has accelerated this country down, you know, to certain disaster. It was already certain. It's just faster. I mean, when Obama first took office, the public debt was $6.3 trillion. All right, that's $56,000 per average household. Now it's up to $72,000 per household. And there are other states that are just, you know, you think Greece had it rough. You know, here, I'll just read a couple paragraphs. Where is this from? This is the New York Times. State debt woes grow too big to camouflage. California, New York, and other states are showing many of the same signs of debt overload that recently took Greece to the brink. And it's going anyway. Don't worry about it. Budgets that will not balance, accounting that mass debt, the use of derivatives to plug holes, and armies of retired public workers who are counting on benefits that are proving harder and harder to pay. And states are responding in sometimes desperate ways, raising concerns that they too could face a debt crisis. New Hampshire was recently ordered by its state Supreme Court to put back $110 million that it took from a medical malpractice insurance pool to balance the budget. Colorado tried so far unsuccessfully to grab a $500 million surplus from Pinnacle Assurance, a state workers' compensation insurer that was privatized in 2002. It wanted the money for its university system and seems likely to get a lesser amount, perhaps $200 million. Not that it can get any. I mean, Connecticut has tried to issue its own accounting rules. Hawaii has inaugurated a four-day school week. California accelerated its corporate income tax this year, making companies pay 70% of their 2010 taxes by June 15th. And many states have balanced their budgets with federal health care dollars that Congress has not yet appropriated. And it goes on and on and on and on. This is, and yeah, but you know, green shoots. Right. And I want to share this one thing that my first, and it plays all into this. You know, it's all been a, you know, a how many minds can we enslave thing? Well, we're trying to free them. Well, where I got that from, and kind of, you know, I go, wow, it's like watching when you go flying at the TSA, you'll have a young couple in their early 20s with two little kids, 2 to 4 around in there. That was the first time I saw this. And they're going, oh, yeah, take your shoes off for the nice man. Yeah, lift your arms so he can wand you and all stuff. Make it like a game. You know, get in line. Here, this is how you go through the cattle chute. I mean, you're being programmed. How long does it take? You know, when did the National Socialist Party start taking over in Germany? You know, it was kind of, you know, early 30s thing. You know, within 7, 8, 10 years, you know, what were they able to get the people to do? You know, how old are you? All of a sudden you're 11, and then you're 21. And all of a sudden you're out there with a gun in your hand. I mean, it's just, this is, wow, it's like a Nazi playbook. So I remember my first thought. When I was thinking, just years ago, I just remember, I go, wow, I remember that. When I was about 3, my youngest sister, I remember she was born, so she was a baby. So this is 1965, about probably 64, 65. And all of a sudden, I remember my father was in the Air Force. Then he was a forest ranger in Florida. We lived at a base of a tower that, you know, he'd go up and he'd look for fires or something. I don't really remember. But I remember when we first moved to Florida, he got out of the Air Force, and he introduced me to this old woman. And he said, here, she's going to be taking care of you now during the day, and we'll bring you here. And you go, okay. A couple of weeks go by, and she says, when your dad was little and saw it, you knew my dad when he was little? Yeah. He's my son. Oh, it's my grandmother. Well, nobody explained to me how you got grandmothers. At that young age, I thought the police issued you your grandmother. How messed up is that? That you have a young kid thinking that?